During the Shtiklach for Barba Chukotai, Tavshin Pei Gimel, learned some Divrei Torah on this double parasha. Open up with two comments by the Chatam Sofer. On the words of Avarta Shofar Churah B'chol Artzichem, Rashi comments that we learn from here that you're allowed to blow the shofar on Yom Kippur that falls out on Shabbat in the year of Yom Kippur. Normally, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat, we're not allowed to blow the shofar, but like we don't do nowadays. But if Yom Kippur falls out on Yovel, if Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbat during the year of Yovel, you're allowed to blow the shofar. And Chatam Sofer actually points out that there's a remez to this. Shofar Churah B'kol is Rosh Tevot of Shabbat, Shin Taf Bet. And you scramble it around, it becomes Rosh Tevot of Shabbat. The Ramban points out, the Chatam Sofer quotes, there's a big problem with this. It doesn't make any sense. Rashi says that this pasuk is telling you that you're allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbat that falls out, on Yom Kippur that falls out on Shabbat in the year of Yovel, as if you're not allowed to do it normally. But we know that midaraita, you are allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbat, on Yom Kippur. There's no problem. It's not a malacha. So how do we explain what Rashi is talking about? He's trying to explain the pasuk. Why is he bringing a din derabanan? So the Chatam Sofer explains that over here, the Yom Kippur shofar is a little bit different. Because Yom Kippur shofar of Yovel does do something. It's true, it doesn't do a classic 39 malachot, but it frees the slaves in the year of Yovel. And so it's fundamentally different from the shofar that's blown every year on Rosh Hashanah, which is just for the sake of being ma'orer, of waking us up. But this year it actually does something. It frees the slaves. So you might have thought that this year, because it does something, that it basically it frees the slaves, which even in the Ramban Shita is a form of a transaction, which you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, even midoraita. Therefore, you might think that it would be asur. So the Chatam Sofer says, this is why Rashi tells you that it's mutar. Now, why is it mutar? Explains, because really the slaves start to go free already on Rosh Hashanah. It's just that the freedom is completed on Yom Kippurim. Another comment that he makes in the words, V'ha'aretz lo timachar l'tzitut, ki li ha'aretz gigerem toshavim atem imadi. We know the rule is that if a person sells land, it goes free in Yovel. It goes back to the original owners. So the Chatam Sofer says this is hinted at in the words Gerim v'Toshavim. You might think that, okay, you know what? We don't have any possession of our land because you don't have the permission to sell it forever. You don't have permission to sell your land forever, and therefore it's not really yours. It's like you're a renter. You don't have rights to sell. Only a person who has rights to sell can be considered a proper owner, and therefore you're a ger in that sense. But on the other hand, it says, the fact is that it's ironically more yours, because even if you sell, it just comes back to you, generation after generation. So how could you be more of a toshav? So in that sense, we're both gerim and toshavim. Next, we have a comment from the Kli Yakar on the mitzvah of ribit. Al tikach meito neshach v'tarbit. You're not allowed to take neshach v'tarbit from a person that you give a loan to. The Kli Yakar makes a classic comment. The Kli Yakar traditionally hated money. There's no other way to say it. He did not like the idea of chasing after wealth. And over here, he says that the reason why a person is not allowed to charge interest for a loan in Judaism is because it's actually a lack of bitachon. How does he say that? He says, normally when you make an investment in something or if you go to work, so you don't know what's going to happen. You have no idea. That's the nature of an investment. There's no such thing as a 100% investment. So when a person puts some money down, he has to still pray to God to make sure that he's going to get it back. But over here, we have a situation where a person lends money to somebody else and he knows that he's going to get it back because the other person is a Jew. He knows that he can rely on that person to give it back to him. But he's also demanding interest on that. He's demanding that he's going to add extra. And this is a lack of bitachon, because once you know that you're going to get extra, you don't have to pray for it because you can trust the Jew that you're going to get it back. Agav, he says, this is why it's okay to charge interest to a non-Jew, because at least in the Kli Yakar's time, you couldn't trust the non-Jews to give the money back and you couldn't trust them to give your interest back. So therefore, they're still required a little bit of bitachon. It could be for the fact that that the non-Jews over there had a little bit more power. If they didn't want to give you your money back, there wasn't really much recourse. Whereas with the Jew, you could always go to Beit Din and take care of it that way. Next, we'll take a look at the comment by the Sfat Emet about Shemitah. The Torah says, "Ki tavo la'aretz asher ani noten lachem v'shavta ha'aretz Shabbat la'Hashem." It's referred to as Shabbat la'Hashem, and the pasuk says, "Ani noten." It's interesting. The Sfat Emet points out it doesn't say Natan; it says noten. Noten is a language of present. It's not that he gave it to us, but that he gives it to us. And he says that's the point over here. The point of Shemitah is it teaches us that every 7 years, Hashem re-gifts it to Bnei Israel. The land does not really belong to us permanently, but rather Hashem gives it to us again every Shemitah. This is captured actually in the bracha in Parashat Toldot that Yitzchak gives to Yaakov. V'yitein lecha Elohim, and Rashi comments, yitein v'yachzor v'yitein, that he gives and then he gives again. And the Kli Yaakov points out, it says, Kigerim b'toshavim atem imadi. This is a shevach to Bnei Yisrael, that they should know that they are gerim and also toshavim. They're gerim in the sense that it takes every 7 years they have to be regifted the land, but the toshavim, because once they're given it, it's theirs for at least 7 years. This is actually very similar to the comment by the Or HaChaim on the mitzvah of Shabbat, where he says that every single Shabbat gives energy to the world to continue to exist. The world only has enough koch for 6 days, and every single Shabbat, when we bring in Shabbat, when we are mevarech, when we are mekadesh, we give koch, we are shutaf, we're partners in Hashem's creation of the world, because we give the world enough koch to exist for another 7 days. Okay, last comment on Parshat Bahar, by the Ketav Kabbalah, Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, on the word shofar tshu'ah, this shofar which we blow on Yom Kippur of Yovel. He says, what does the word tshu'ah itself mean? Obviously, this is also relevant for Rosh Hashanah. But over here, he says there's two parallel meanings for the word tshu'ah. Because really, he says, it really should be called tshu'at shofar, which is the blow, so to speak, of the shofar, the sound of the tshu'ah of the shofar. Why does it say shofar tshu'ah? So he says, one meaning of tshu'ah is actually from ra'uah, which is weaken. And so the idea of the shofar, at least in this case of Yom Kippur, is that this shofar comes to weaken the shalshalot, the bonds, the chains of the avadim. So it frees them. That's the job of this tru'ah. It breaks the chains. But then there's another meaning. Tru'ah is also milashon tru'at melech bo, or vayar panav b'tru'ah. And the reason and the explanation over there, which the Ramban points out, is re'ut, which is chevra, as in ve'hafta le're'acha kamocha. So that's the language of tru'ah. And he has over here, during this year of Yovel, Kriyat Dror, L'kol Yoshvi Ha'aretz, this is a year of simcha and re'ut between Ashirim and Aniyim, because they get back on a level playing field. People get their land back, people go free from their bondage, everything goes back to the way it is, and therefore the social norms can be changed and be much more congenial between people. Moving on to B'chukotai, first comment by the Chatam Sofer, the words Im B'chukotai Tilecho Vet Mitzvay Tishmeru V'asitam Otam, Rashi famously says on these first few words, She'tihiyu Amelim B'Torah Al Menat Lishmor V'Lasot. In other words, that the words Im B'chukotai Tilecho doesn't refer to the performance of mitzvot, but rather to the study of mitzvot, the in-depth study. So the Chatam Sofer quotes the Ma'amar Chazal, that this is talking about people who go to the Beit HaMidrash, if you go and you perform the mitzvah, that's what's good. But if you go and you just learn, even if you don't do it, even if you don't end up learning, you're still going to get schar iyun for trying to go. That's the words, that the amelut that you put into trying to learn, you also get a reward for that. And he goes on and he says, the Mefarshim point out that, you know, we believe that the schar for a mitzvah in this world doesn't exist. We don't get rewarded for mitzvot in this world. Schar mitzvah b'hai alma leika. So how can the Torah over here in Parshat Bechukotai, right at the beginning, make us all these promises that if we, you know, ensconce ourselves in Torah, if we toil in Torah and we do the mitzvot, then we're going to get all this wonderful schar, shalom, and produce and everything, and rain. What happened to schar mitzvah b'hayel leika? So the Chatam Sofer says, that's true for the actions of the mitzvot. But the schar tircha, the effort that we put into every mitzvah, that we do get rewarded for. And so he says, holeich vein oseh, if you try, even if you don't succeed, schar halicha b'yado, even if you didn't do it, you still get schar for trying. And he says, this is why our schora, our business is much better than any other business in the world, because any other business, you can put in as much effort as you want, but if you don't execute, if you don't sell, if you don't succeed, then you get nothing back. Nobody pays you for effort. But with Torah and mitzvot, our masa umatan, our transactions, our work, our business is always going to be rewarded. That's why our schorah is better than anybody else's schorah. Sfat Emet, quotes a different midrash on this pasuk. It quotes a midrash about David, how David HaMelech says that every single morning he wakes up, Chishavti Drachai, and I plan to go to do a bunch of things, but my feet always take me to the Beit Midrash. So the Sfat Emet wonders, what exactly does that mean? And he answers that every single morning, David HaMelech wakes up thinking he's going to do one thing, and he actually does. He does do that thing. But the point is that he does it with the context of the Beit HaMidrash. Everything is L'Shem Shamayim. So he does things, but he's always thinking about the Beit HaMidrash. His legs aren't literally going to the Beit HaMidrash, but everything that he does is in that context. Sfat Emet also points out, he says that we have this idea, which is based in Pirkei Avot, that Tzchar Mitzvah, Mitzvah. The reward for a mitzvah is a mitzvah. It sounds very esoteric. What exactly does that mean? So the Sfat Emet says that when you start out doing a mitzvah, sometimes it's a chok. Sometimes you don't even understand it. You don't know why you're doing it. You don't know the rationale. You don't know the purpose. You don't know the benefit. The schar for doing a mitzvah properly is that you get some kind of insight into why you did the mitzvah in the first place. This is a powerful idea for people who struggle with mitzvot, is that, you know, sometimes the understanding comes only post facto. There's a story that they tell about Yeshiva Balajan, that a lot of maskilim, Yeshiva Balajan was this very, very big yeshiva, and it was instituted basically at the beginning of the Enlightenment when people started to move away from Torah into more, you know, intellectual pursuits. And there's a group of Jews that were Orthodox, but they started to drift away because they had so many questions. And they sent one of their number to go to Volozhin in order to get answers, right? And they decided that afterwards they would get together at the end and he would come back with answers to all of their theological, philosophical questions. So after a year, he came back and they said, "No, do you have answers?" He says, "To be honest, I don't really have any answers, but I also don't have any more questions." So it's the same idea over here. Sometimes we have questions when we come into the mitzvah, and those questions fall away after we actually perform it. Moving on to the Tochacha portion of Bechukotai, the pasuk says, "V'im lo tishme'u li," and the Hamek Davar, the Netziv, says this means "Shalot asu lishmi." Says you do the mitzvot, but you don't do it l'shem shamayim. He says, but that's a strange interpretation, because the coming psukim that describe all the terrible things that are going to happen to us during the Tochacha, how could they be the result of such a trivial thing? I mean, it's important to do things lishma, but a chet like that is not big enough for such a big onesh. So he explains that, no, you have to read the subsequent psukim. The subsequent psukim describe a progression, a downward spiral. So it starts with Im lo tishmu li, and then it continues with lo tasu et kol hamitzvot ha'ele. That means you're not going to do them at all, right? But in between, you've got a lot of steps. You have lo tishmu li, then lo tasu, and then v'im b'chukotai tim asu, v'et mishvatai tik al nafshechem. You'll become disgusted, l'hafeirchem et briti. And then it continues getting worse and worse and worse. He actually, he lists seven different progressions, seven different ways that we continue to go downward until finally we deserve the Tochacha. He says it starts with haskama shelo la'asot l'shem Hashem, not to do it lishma. Then not to do it at all. Then mima'asim et ha'oseh. Then you make fun of the people who are doing dinei derabanan. You say to them, it's not even written this way in the Torah, you're just listening to the rabbis. Then you say, yeah, you shouldn't be learning the divrei Torah at all. And then mishtadlim shelo yavo mi la'asot al pi ha'Torah. You try to prevent people from doing it. Then you try to prevent people from accepting all Malchut Shamayim at all. And then eventually you do things just lahachis. And so there's this progression of avera, goreret avera, goreret avera, goreret avera, until finally the Tochacha is actually deserved. The last comment that I wanted to do is the comment of the Malbim on the words viradu bachem son eichem. So the pasuk actually says, let me just find it. It says, "V'im telchu imikari v'lo tovu lishmali v'asafti alechem." No, that's not the one. Here, "V'natati banai b'achem v'nigavtem lifnei oyveichem v'adu b'achem sonechem v'nastem me'in ordef etchem." It says, "I will set my face against you and you'll be routed by your enemies." The word over there is oyveichem. And then it says that your foes will dominate you, and foes is sonechem. So just for the record, it mentions first oyveichem and then son eichem, your enemies, and then those that hate you. The Malbim says it's interesting because normally the difference between an oyev and a sone is that the oyev is somebody whose animosity towards you is overt, is obvious and known, and therefore he attacks you physically, verbally. He actually does something. He's your enemy. He everybody knows that he's against you, and he he tries to hurt you. But a soneh, sinah could be in the heart. Hatred could be in the heart. You don't know. Or it could be passive-aggressive. Not everybody knows about it. And so you would have expected, actually, that if there is a progression from kal to chamur, it should have started with soneichem. And then oyveichem. First, those that hate you in their heart. And then oyveichem, those that actually come out to try to attack you and hurt you. That's what oyveichem is. So why over here do we have soneichem after oyveichem? And the Malbim says a frightening thing. He says, the truth is that in this pasuk, oyveichem refers to oyvim that are not Jewish. These are people, yes, who are trying to attack you or trying to hurt you. These are people who are from the outside. The soneichem over here is from within. Soneichem shebahem atzmam. Like the many different factions that are in the Beit Sheni and Rahman Litzlan that we continue to have to this day. All the different kinds of people, all the different kinds of Jews who hate other kinds of Jews. No, if we're slightly different, the narcissism of small differences, as Freud says, so many of us are similar in so many different ways, but all we can see is the ways that make us different, and then that makes us into sonim, and that's even more insidious, even worse, the potential to create more destruction than even oyveichem. Be'ezrat Hashem, we should spend the rest of this sphere period trying to come closer to each other, trying to be metaken, the lo nahagu kavod zebazeh, of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we can come to Matan Torah, come to Shavuot, with Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, Ki Ish Echad, Belev Echad. Shabbat Shalom.